Okay, so let's get into this. We're doing a deep dive today on something that is, when you think about it, a fundamentally bizarre genre, Christmas music.
Really is. It's so predictable, and it's dominated by these massive hits that are, older than most of the people listening to them.
Exactly, and yet it's one of the most stable, most lucrative parts of the entire music
Oh, it's
industry.
not just stable, it's an absolute powerhouse.
Yeah.
In the US alone, we're talking holiday records pulling in over $177 million every single year.
That number is just staggering.
It is, especially when you realize that's basically a whole genre's revenue crammed into, what, 4 or 5 weeks. It's like a guaranteed payout every December.
That's the tension we really want to explore today. So our mission here is to unpack the unique and often pretty cutthroat economics behind it all.
And why it's become almost impossible to write a new classic.
Right. And also how the move to streaming has, maybe surprisingly, just made those old songs even more powerful, even more predictable.
So for you, this is really a shortcut to understanding that whole mechanism. Why every store, every radio station, every playlist you hear is running back to the same small group of songs.
And what that reliability means for the companies that own them. Okay, so let's start with the money. Because this genre just plays by completely different rules than, say, pop music. The concentration of revenue is, well, it's practically a monopoly.
Concentration is almost too soft a word for it. Seriously. If you look at the streaming data from 2023, the top 50 holiday songs,
Yeah.
just 50,
Just 50 songs.
accounted for a shocking 35% of all holiday streaming.
35%. That is just wild. I mean, to put that in perspective, in normal pop music, the top 50 tracks only make up about 12% of the streams.
Right. And that gap, 35 versus 12, that tells you everything you need to know.
It tells you that Christmas music is the absolute definition of go big or go home.
It really is. If you're a new artist, you are fighting for scraps. You're competing with thousands of other songs for what's left over. If you're not Mariah Carey, well, good luck. Your song can just vanish.
So you have this massive incentive, right? The $177 million prize. But the door to get in is almost sealed shut because the audience, well, they only want to hear a few specific things.
Precisely. And the ones who did get in, like Mariah with All I Want for Christmas Is You, or Wham, with Last Christmas, they've basically minted the ultimate evergreen hits.
They're not just hits, they're like financial assets.
That's the perfect way to put it. They're like high-yield annual bonds. They give you these incredibly dependable, steady earnings year after year.
And that's why they're called gems when a music catalog gets sold, because of that predictability.
Exactly. Think of it like buying a toll road. You value it based on its future cash flow. A normal pop hit might be huge for a year, maybe two, and then its value drops off a cliff.
Its future is uncertain.
Very uncertain. But a Christmas hit, you know you're getting paid on December 1st. It's recession-proof, it's trend-proof. It is the gold standard for dependable revenue in music.
Okay, so if the reward is that big, that dependable, why isn't every songwriter on the planet trying to write the next one? Which brings us to, I guess, the creative side of it.
The creative holy grail. It's honestly considered one of the hardest things to do in songwriting today.
And the reason is nostalgia, right?
It's a huge barrier.
Yeah.
Listeners, that they aren't really looking for new music. They're looking for tradition, for comfort. They want the songs that take them right back to their childhood.
We're all just chasing the soundtrack of our past. And the timeline proves it. You mentioned Wham from 84. Mariah from 94.
Right. And, Ariana Grande and Kelly Clarkson have had some strong originals in the last decade or so.
Sure, but we haven't seen another one of those global, multi-billion stream, everybody knows it kind of songs in, what, 20 years?
No. The genre is, in some ways, creatively stuck. But what's fascinating is when you look at the classics that did make it, a lot of them share a secret.
Which is.
Many of them are actually non-denominational.
Meaning they don't explicitly mention the religious side of Christmas.
Exactly. Think of Let It Snow
Yeah.
or Winter Wonderland. They don't even have Christmas in the title. Some were written by people who didn't even celebrate the holiday.
They're more.
Seasonal.
They're seasonal. They create a universal feeling. Cold weather, snow, going home. And that feeling stretches their airplay from Thanksgiving all the way into February, which just maximizes their revenue. That seems like such a hard formula to replicate without it feeling cheap.
It is. The danger of trying too hard is huge. I read this great line that said adding sleigh bells to a song should come with a public warning.
I love that.
It's the ultimate cliche, isn't it? It just screams that you're trying to cash in.
So if you can't write that huge mainstream hit, There's this other path to making money in December, and that's sync licensing.
Yes, sync, which is just, you know, getting your song placed in a TV show, a movie, or most importantly, a commercial. For catalog owners, this is a massive, massive deal.
And it opens the door for songs that aren't even Christmas songs at all.
Absolutely. A song like What a Wonderful World or Hallelujah, they get licensed like crazy around the holidays.
Because of the feeling.
Just because of the positive, evocative feeling, it gives them this whole other seasonal income stream and just makes their catalog that much more valuable.
You know, another thing that stood out was this real regional divide. The UK and the US have some very different ideas of a classic.
It's a great example of just cultural inertia.
Oh.
In the UK, you have these massive Christmas songs that are almost completely unknown here.
Like Chris Rea is Driving Home for Christmas.
A total staple over there.
Yeah. And then there's Slade.
I had to look them up. The 70s glam rock band.
And their song, Merry Xmas, Everybody, is basically the British office party anthem. It's loud, it's a bit of a mess, a few drinks, sing along, as they say. It just never crossed the pond. Even the words are different. They say Father Christmas more.
Right, like in Greg Lake's song, I Believe in Father Christmas. Mm-hmm. It's a term we've sort of phased out for Santa.
But despite all that, Mariah and Wham are still the two global giants.
They dominate everywhere. They transcend it all. But even the timing is different, especially in the UK.
Right, because they don't have Thanksgiving, but they still wait.
They wait. Decorations might go up after Halloween, but the music that waits for December 1st, that's open season. Playing it before then is seen as bad taste, even unlucky.
Wow. And then it all just stops cold after the holidays?
Stops cold after New Year's or Epiphany. It's this very short, very intense window.
And that short window for listeners must just create a crazy timeline for the business side of things.
Oh, it's completely accelerated. Artists have to be recording this stuff before summer. I mean, George Michael wrote Last Christmas in February and recorded it in June.
You have to fake the winter feeling in the middle of summer.
You do. And if he's writing in February, you can bet the advertisers are planning even earlier for those big sync deals.
They must be working months and months ahead.
For sure. They're thinking about Christmas music in July and August. They have to get those huge ad campaigns locked in way before anyone's thinking about buying presents.
Which is why we see things like those writer camps, right? Like the Warner Chapel one with 50 writers.
That's a really key modern strategy. They aren't asking them to write the next Mariah. That's not the goal.
No, they're creating a supply for the advertisers.
Exactly. They're creating songs that are perfect for sync, for background playlists. It's a lower pressure way to make sure there's a steady supply of new, non-cliche options for brands.
Which brings us right to our last section, how streaming has totally changed the game for Christmas music.
Fundamentally, the whole idea of a cohesive Christmas album you'd buy on CD, that's less important now.
It's all about the individual song.
All about the song. And getting that song onto the right curated playlist.
And because nothing is physical anymore, we have what they call the infinite shelf. Every song is available forever.
And that allows for these totally unpredictable comebacks. A song doesn't die when it leaves the store shelves because there are no shelves.
So curation becomes the new gatekeeper.
It's everything. People are listening passively. They click on Christmas pop or holiday jazz. They're looking for a trusted curator, whether it's an algorithm or a brand, to just tell them what to listen to.
And that combination, the infinite shelf and the curators, has brought back some really weird, forgotten songs.
This is the really fun part. Songs that were super regional or just novelties are now global hits. Take I Want a Hippopotamus for Christmas.
I love that song.
Apparently, it was written as like a promotion for a local zoo, the Cleveland Zoo or something, just a marketing jingle.
And now it's a streaming giant. That's incredible. And then there's Dominic the Christmas Donkey.
Same thing. These songs work because they're quirky. They stand out. A curator loves them because it breaks up the endless cycle of Mariah and Bing Crosby.
You know, for all this talk of streaming, it's interesting that traditional radio is still a huge piece of the puzzle here.
A huge driver of royalties. Even now, hearing a song on the FM radio, especially during the holidays, carries this real cultural weight.
I read that great little story about someone whose first exposure to Christmas music was just their bus driver playing it on the radio.
The bus driver as the ultimate influencer.
It just shows how deep this stuff runs in our lives in December.
And that reach whether it's a bus radio or a TikTok video, it all feeds back into that catalog value. It's how you connect new fans to those old valuable songs.
So the value isn't just the one stream, it's the constant discovery that keeps the asset paying out year after year.
It's a self-reinforcing machine of nostalgia and finance.
Okay, so let's summarize the key takeaways. First, Christmas music is this incredibly lucrative but also incredibly closed-off genre, mainly because we, the audience, just want nostalgia more than we want anything new.
Mm-hmm. And second, sync deals and streaming playlists are now the main engines that keep these songs valuable, or even bring forgotten ones back from the dead.
Which leaves us with a final provocative thought for you to think about.
Yeah, if a song's value is highest when it's dependable and, you know, not strictly religious.
And if the biggest hits of all time aren't really about Christmas, but about a universal seasonal feeling.
Like going home or seeing the first snow.
Is the smartest, most strategic path for a new songwriter to just avoid the word Christmas completely.
And just write a great evergreen hit about the feeling of driving home in the cold.
Maybe you skip the sleigh bells entirely.
Focus on winter, focus on the feeling, and let the curators and advertisers do the rest.